The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Every Friday we sit somebody down in front of me in Studio 10 and ask them to guide us through the soundtrack to their lives. Today is the turn of singer Jack L.
Hello.
Jack L, I'm just telling you and everybody else, you were born in the hospital in Thai in 1973 to Sean and Rose.
Mm-hmm.
The youngest of four.
Yep.
So you have two older sisters and one older brother.
That's right.
You were the baby then and you're the baby still.
I still am. Still let me be the baby.
And it's a garage. You're brought up in a garage.
Yeah, it's a very old garage just on the Kilkenny Road out of a tie there. My brother is still running it. But it started with my great-grandfather drove steam engines and all that kind of stuff. And then my grandfather kind of founded it as a place where there was a mechanic. It kind of grew. It was a very big garage. And then he broke it into three sections between my father, who did the trucks, and my two other uncles, his brothers, who did cars and electronics. And then on my mother's side, there was mechanics as well. So I was surrounded by engines and all that kind of stuff. So,
Was it going to be a life as a mechanic for you if you didn't start singing?
Well, it was, you know, I left school early enough, as did my brother and my father, and began my mechanic career. But I wasn't particularly that way inclined. I was always obsessed by music. That was always the obsession. But every summer, everybody would work in the garage painting or doing something, or you would work up to where you were working on the petrol pumps. And, I wasn't doing great in school, and summer holidays came and school started and nobody really said anything, and I just continued working in the garage. Of course, it was a small conversation, but that was kind of... I always say I'm still on my summer holidays.
Because September came and went and you never went back.
Yeah, that was kind of
it. We get on to that. Let's go right back to the start now. This doesn't have to be an audio memory, but what's your first memory?
My first memory would be, I grew up in... I started my life, first years, we were in an estate called Park Breed in the Thai. And that was right next to Tegrel, the asbestos, we used to call it. So I remember the sound of industry and all that. But one of my first memories is being awoke one night to the sound of a little old session going on in the house, where I had some relations of my dad's had come down from Dublin, and they had acoustic guitars and banjos. And I remember going down and just being amazed by the magic of music. Suddenly everybody was having such a great time.
And, yeah.
And I suppose that was kind of where I started my journey.
What age music. Were you?
I think I would have been three or four at the time.
And was your dad a singer?
My dad, well, he was a great singer, yeah.
But he's a great singer. But yeah. Yeah.
No, not professionally. And he could have done it professionally. But that's where I got the love of music from. He just had he's a great voice and a great passion for a lot of the old tenors and Sinatra and all that era. And then my mum would have been more so Beatles and Elvis, you know. So I got a great, large palette of all the greats.
Are you born with a deep voice? Now, you're obviously not, but is it sort of predestined in your genes that you're going to have, when your voice breaks, that you're going to have a tenor or a baritone or whatever you might be?
Well, it's kind of look of the draw. What's the Leonard Cohen song? I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice.
That's you.
Funny enough, when I was a kid, I had a soprano voice. And
did you sing in choirs?
Yeah, I could do all the high kind of stuff. But then my voice broke. So since I was about 12 or 13, I've sounded like I was 40, you know. So I remember I used to sing in school and everybody used to laugh because I had such a low voice. But it's kind of turned out all right.
It turned out all right for you, yeah. Okay, so TV memories. We play this one and then you can talk to us about its significance after we hear it.
Dr. David Banner, physician, scientist, searching for a way to tap into the hidden strengths that all humans have. Then an accidental overdose of gamma radiation alters his body chemistry. And now when David Banner grows angry or outraged, a startling metamorphosis occurs.
V The Incredible Hulk, Dr. David Banner. Great memory there.
Yeah, I was, you know, I was, I don't know, might have been six or seven, I suppose, when I think it was 79, 80, that maybe was on the TV. But yeah, it was hilarious because I became obsessed with it. And, you know, it was that thing of it was on every week and you'd wait all week to see The Incredible Hulk. And then I got into, you know, bursting the shirts open and my mother would have to sew them up and bending every spoon in the house. All that kind of stuff. So, yeah, but I love The Incredible Hulk.
It was the transformation, wasn't it? And then the moment, because as a child, I remember, you know, predicting, oh, this is going to go wrong here. Because there was always a simmer.
Twice a week he would turn it. It was always twice a week, yeah. Right. Somewhere around the middle and at the end. And then he would walk off at the end and he'd have that, the really sad music. You know, I used to love that music as well.
Because he was a drifter, wasn't he? He had to drift.
He had to drift, yeah, because he couldn't let anybody know that he was the Incredible Hulk, yeah.
Yeah. And Dr. David Banner, everyone, he was presumed dead.
Yes, and what was your man's name? McGee was after him all the time as well, the same old guy. But it's gas. I mean, I love, you know, I'm a nerd about the Hulk. I've DVDs of all.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, of all that kind of stuff. And it's funny listening to the old the director's cuts talking about it and everything, what was going on.
I sort of feel a bit sad for people growing up now because that thing that you, the very first thing you said, waiting from week to week.
Yeah. It was a big thing.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was, yeah. Because you'd all week to talk about it and then talk about it after it happened and on and on. Now, you know, you just binge on things because they're on
Netflix or
every night.
Or
there's a few of them, actually. I know there's the new Star Trek is on a weekly basis, which is pretty cool if you're Trekkie.
Yeah. What sort of a child were you? Apart from ripping your shirt apart and all that.
Well, I suppose I was kind of, introverted, extroverted. I don't know. I was quite enough. I had, you know, my brothers and sisters were all, you know, they're all great talkers. So I suppose I listened a lot. And you know, we grew up in the town for a while, but then I moved out to the country when I was about five or six. And I loved living in the country. My mother gave me a great love of nature and you know, the garden and birds and all that kind of stuff. So I loved all that. I used to, you know, go for wandering in the country.
You say you were introverted, extroverted. Were you a loner? Did you keep to yourself or had you got loads of mates?
Oh, no, I had loads of mates and I still have the same guys who are my friends to this day. Yeah, since baby infants, I have a lot of the same friends, would you believe?
Isn't that great?
A group of fellas. Yeah, it's gas that we've all maintained a friendship for so long. But that's, you know, that's the nice thing about a small town, I think.
What's the population? I thought it isn't that small.
I don't know. It must...
Would it be 15,000? Would it be 15,000?
I don't know what it must be near that at this stage. I mean, during the boom, it got a lot of influx of building everywhere and lots of people moved down from Dublin. You know, it's become a bit of a commuter town.
Okay, so you say your mum gave you a love of nature and the garden and birds. Put your headphones on there and see if you can spot which bird this is. And it is...
Yeah, well, it's the lark, yeah?
The lark.
It was a game we used to play when I was a kid, you know? You'd be outdoors and you could hear that sound, but you couldn't see. You know, the trick was to find it. It was that thing where you'd be looking at the skyline for ages and eventually you'd spot it. It was always flew the highest, supposedly, the lark. So that was kind of, that was a neat little game we used to play.
And I remember playing football and rugby and the Lukemans. Were always the best players on the Athy team. Were they your family or the cousins?
A lot of them.
As a Luckman or Lukeman?
Well, it's Lukeman where I come from.
Right.
But if you go up the road, it's, you know, Carlow, it's Lokeman. And then if you go to Dublin, it's Lockman. So I changed it to the spelling that I was used to hearing because when I would play rugby or something and they would put my name in the papers, I would say my name is Lukeman and they would write L-U-K-E-M. So I just changed the spelling to the way I'm used to hearing it, whereas... It's originally spelled L-O-U-G-H-M-A and Lockman.
What position did you play when you were playing rugby?
I played from the age of 8 to 18. So I played like all the forward positions. But as I got older, I was pretty fast. So, you know, I played for I work, kind of worked my way up from the forwards right out to the wing. I played for the first for a tie on the wing, and that's where I ended my career. I was getting too well known at that stage, and I was a marked man.
Go on. So you were singing, were you?
I remember you used to play actually playing Kildare, and I remember when you kind of began, you were a marked man. That fell off Joe Maxey's on the team.
I remember this is the day I decided it was probably time to hang up my rugby boots because I was at the bottom of a ruck, right? And I got these studs on my hand.
Yeah, all right.
And your man says, tell Dustin about that. So I said, maybe I shouldn't be playing rugby anymore. So yeah. You got a bit of that as well.
Well, you be an X on your back, don't you?
Yeah, you do, yeah. So I suppose when we talk to people in this, there's a lot of firsts, you know. Can you remember your first girlfriend, for example?
Oh, good Lord.
Where was the disco in Athy?
Well, we would have had school discos, you know, and the rugby club discos. They would have been a thing. But going to the pictures, that was
what was the name of the cinema?
The Grove in Athy.
Right.
Was...
that's on the way in there.
It's gone now.
Oh, is it gone?
They,
right.
They knocked it down and stuck a little up on top of it, which right. was a beautiful old Art Deco building. So I didn't think that was a...
But that's happened all over the country.
Yeah, I don't know. You go to Europe and you see the way they maintain all these old buildings, and over time they become really important. So, but anyway, that's progress. Yeah.
So the Grove, kissing in the back row, movies back on a Saturday night.
Yeah. Serena Brennan, I think, was the name of the. She was an American girl who somehow lived in a tie. So that was probably no. We didn't actually. I remember we just held hands.
Right. And what did you Innocent go to see? What
I think it was the original Footloose. I'm really creaking here. You can hear my brain creaking trying to remember these things.
That's good. But you were introduced to Star Wars in the Grove as well.
Yes, I was lucky enough to be, you know, just where the age I was, I missed Star Wars. But by the time The Emperor Strikes Back came out, they did a double bill of Star Wars and then The Emperor Strikes Back. So I saw the two of them together, which for any Star Wars fan is very memorable, you know.
And you hooked then?
Ah, yeah, all the figures and all that kind of stuff and still, you know.
You don't still have figures, do you?
No. I have no idea where they are, actually. I was looking for them recently for my nephew, but I can't find them. I don't know where they are. They're lost somewhere. But yeah, no, it's fun. And it's fun even following Star Wars still in that way, you know, just that it's an old memory.
I'm going to play this, and because this has happened before you were born, so you'll have to explain to me how it's important to you.
It's one small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
Oh, that looks beautiful from here.
It has a stark beauty all its own. It's like much of the high desert of the United States. It's different, but it's very pretty out here.
Neil Armstrong, 1969, Apollo 11. You weren't even born.
No, I wasn't. But I had an obsession with... you know, the moon landing and space in general. It was the wonders of space and all that. So, yeah, I remember having a scrapbook and...
Can you remember where it came from, though?
The scrapbook?
No, the interest, the obsession.
As a kid, I suppose, trying to escape a small town and space was such an intriguing thing. And then stuff like Star Wars and all that kind of stuff would have... I know, I was always into science fiction and all that. And... So yeah, I remember I had a scrapbook and I had lots of anything I could find about space or the moon landing and all that stuff in it. I remember my sister used to have Look In magazine, I think it was called, and I used to cut bits out of that. You know, you worked off whatever your brothers and sisters had, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, media wise, you were just getting sporadic bits and pieces. You know, anything that came from America was amazing and all that kind of stuff. But so I wrote a song on my new album called "The Sunset Is Blue on Mars," which it is. It's the thinner atmosphere, and it's another one of those amazing, interesting things. But and I was asked to, you know, it's just funny how full circle things. I was asked to go down and sing it for a bunch of NASA astronauts and Buzz Aldrin down in Cork last year.
Right.
He didn't make it in the end. His son came, but just to be, it was
in
just
the company,
nice to be somewhere.
Have you spoken to an astronaut ever?
Well, I spoke to some of the guys down there. They're all trainee astronauts.
Yes, but no, have you spoken to anybody who's been in space?
No, I haven't, no.
There's something about them. I've spoken to
Well, it's the perspective thing. You go to space and you look back and you realise how what a little speck it is. And then, you know, I'm big into astronomy and the stars and all that. And it's. I mean, years ago, that was our TV when we didn't have TV and all that. All they would have to do was look at the stars. So henceforth, you have all the old Greek myths and all that. But it's people need to look up more. And
can you remember looking up at the moon and thinking there was a man on that there? Moon?
Yeah, well that was the thing I suppose that fascinated me most, that that they had managed to do that.
What did you want to be then when you were?
Well, I wanted to be an astronaut, but you know, growing up I was. And with the old Catholicism, they had me deeply into that. So I was either going to be a priest or an astronaut, right. But I became a musician, which is somewhere in between.
I don't see that myself. What did I see?
You're traveling around a place preaching to people.
Oh, right. Okay.
And, you know, when you write songs, you go into outer space to try and find stuff, basically. You know?
It works for you.
Anyway.
And that flirtation with becoming a priest, was that after this?
So he descends. The wine from the royal pope. The red robes of the cardinal. For his first step on Irish ground. He kneels, as he's done in other countries, to kiss the ground, as though to say, he too is a man, he too lives on earth, he's a spiritual leader, he brings all of that, but he understands how close people have to be to the land they live in. The president greets him.
There you go, the Pope John Paul being greeted by President Hillary at Dublin Airport.
Yeah, it was...
1979. So what age were you? You were...
Well, I was six.
Six.
But it was the first time I was ever on a train, and the first time I was ever in Dublin was when the Pope came. And it was the first time I ever got up that early. To get the train to get to Dublin. And I just, you know, I just remember how packed the train was and how crazy the whole thing was. There was, you know, very masses of people. Was there a million people or something?
Yes, that's what they say.
I remember afterwards, even back in Euston Station, how crowded it was. It was like, you know, Armageddon. It was everybody was trying to get out of town. But yeah, that was one.
So what time were you up at?
News events that I remember. God, we must have been around six probably or something like that. I remember it was dark, so that was mad. And then just being on a train and
Houston, you would have been.
We went to Houston. I remember everybody walked from Houston out to Phoenix Park.
Yeah.
So like...
it's not a long walk now.
It's not a long walk.
But if you're six.
But nowadays you would get the taxi or whatever goes out there. But yeah, so that was my first, you know, big media kind of memory, I suppose.
And you can remember, have you got an image of seeing the Pope?
No, I don't. I remember he went by on the...
Popemobile.
Yeah, he went by in the Popemobile and people were standing on deck chairs and falling through them and all that kind of stuff to try and see him. But no, I don't remember much. I remember my dad actually sang in the choir, did a massive choir. He sang in the choir too in the Phoenix Park. But no, I just have the memory of going to it and all that, but I don't remember it. We were so far back.
Yeah.
And they didn't have screens or anything back then, so you had to use your imagination.
Right, and you were six, so unless somebody put you up on... Well, you weren't up on your dad's... He was in the choir.
He was in the choir, yeah.
Unless somebody put them up on your put you up on their shoulders. Mm. And was it after that then that you said, I want to be a priest?
Well, I can't say I ever really wanted to be a priest now. It was just, you know, when they get you heavy into it around the communion stage, so...
I think a lot of men have... I know you're a bit younger than me, but like I did flirt with the thought of being a priest.
I loved it was science fiction to me, the spiritual thing in the Bible and all the mad stories and all that, you know, that was always fascinating.
There was job security as well, you were guaranteed a house.
I wasn't thinking that far ahead. But I loved, you know, I loved all the stories and Samson and all those things, like The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. So music then, when did you start performing in front of people?
Well, those sessions, I was saying, the few sessions we always had in our house.
And what was your party piece?
Well, I used to sing, lots of stuff, whatever. Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, that was one that I used to do. Minnie the Moocher, I used to love the Blues Brothers. So I learned, you know, you'd learn all the songs off videos. You know, when video came out, you were able to...
Right, I'll play a bit, you join in.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the Lonesome Pine, in the pale sunshine, our hearts entwined. Why, she carved her name and I carved mine. Oh, June, like the mountains, I'm blue like the pine.
Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy.
Was that where it came from?
Way out west, yeah. Well, that's, I remember back in, you know, in the 80s when there was still a lot of black and white shows on RTE, and you know, you had the Laurel and Hardy and the Three Stooges, Charlie Chaplin, Mr. Moto, all those things used to be on. So yeah, I remember seeing this, and it was, and I remember we also had the song sang by somebody else on one of those Top of the Pops records. You remember those ones?
I do.
Saucy covers on them and all yes. that. From the 70s more so. But yeah, so you know that particular.
And did you ever do Lee Marvin?
Yeah, I actually do Wandering Star.
Yeah, I do
it in my own show every now and then. I segue into it at particular times. Yeah.
How low can you go?
Really low, lower than this, baby. If I wasn't on radio,
he wasn't a good singer, was he, Lee Marvin?
No, but it's a fascinating vocal when you listen to it, because he's practically talking, but he somehow managed to squeeze a melody into one. It's all done in one note, but somehow it's an amazing vocal, I think, and that too fascinated me as a kid. You know, you're kind of drawn when you hear certain things that amaze you, and Lee Marvin. Yeah.
I think I have it on 7-inch single. If I find it, you can have it.
Yeah, it's from Paint Your Wagon, and Clint Eastwood sang I Talk to the Trees.
Did he? On the other side, probably.
Yeah, no, that was one of the songs from the musical, which is always hilarious.
Yeah. So you were doing it from an early age, and that was for family and friends.
Mm.
So when did you start actually getting out there in front of people you didn't know and singing?
Well, myself and my friends had, various little, we used to get together and just jam and play songs. And it was when I really knew that I began to survive as a musician was when I abandoned my mechanic career and went working around Europe, you know, working in factories, and went to Holland to work in tulip bulb factories and all that kind of stuff. And then began to busk. And was making more money busking.
So and you never bussed in Ireland?
No, but I came back and I started busking in Ireland. I mean, I was 18 then. I'd played with my friends, we played in pubs and things like that. And little things here and there. But when I went busking, that was kind of, you know, it's people always ask you, you know, what for advice as regards playing music. And it is that leap between having a real job and then actually, you know, making a living being a musician, giving up the stability and being able to go and actually survive as a musician. So
and what were the folks saying around that time? What were the folks saying to you?
I suppose they didn't want me to abandon my. I was 3 years into a 4-year apprenticeship, but I think we all knew that I wasn't destined for the mechanics world. So
right.
I think we, and you know, they were very supportive when I said I'm going to be a musician. So they were always, you know, very helpful and very supportive.
I'm trying to get, because I should have done this, but I'm trying to get one of your songs here, Georgie Boy. There you go, which is like, it's an amazing vocal.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I always listen back to vocals and want to do them again, because even then I was probably 23 or 24, maybe. Maybe a little older, 25. And your voice develops, you know. If you listen to Sinatra in his 40s, that's when he was singing. That's when he had that depth, that, you know, a lived life. And I think you get better as you go along. And if I do say so myself, I'm singing.
Well, listening back to yourself, say, with Georgie Boy, what do you hear?
It's like my voice hasn't broke.
Right.
Yeah. So I broke my voice since. Singing too much. I don't know. It's just a musician thing. You always wanna go back and redo things.
The bay. streets we used to play. Something deep destroyed you. Oh yeah. Now it's up to you to change. Come on, Georgie boy, why don't you stay?
I know that version isn't 20 years old, but...
No, well, that's a different... That's not the album version from Metropolis Blue, which was 1999, yeah.
Yeah, just 20 years next year.
Yeah, next year.
You'll have to do the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's...
Take it on tour.
It only happens the once, does, you know? Yeah. Or the twice.
Georgie Boy on Metropolis Blue album. Excellent, says Clarence Soares. And I was a year or two older than Jack L in school. I remember him having the lead role in, I think, Fiddler on the Roof.
No, I think it was Offstage Course in Fiddler on the Roof, but I had the lead role in The Sound of Music.
Did you?
Captain Von Trapp.
Aha.
Edelweiss, Edelweiss. Great song. Love it.
So many good songs in that.
Oh, I mean, the Sound of Music is like, you know, they call it the golden circle in architecture where something is just perfect. And it just, the songs and everything in it is just an amazing.
I saw it in the Borgosh Energy Theatre recently.
Yeah.
With my daughter. She loved it.
It's evergreen.
I remember, and there is a song called Evergreen in it, isn't there?
Is there?
I think there is. I remember to this day the strength and power of his voice at the audition. He was about 14 or 15. Everyone stopped. This wonderful voice that hit the back wall of the hall. No microphone, no music, just wow. I wish him continued success. No, and I've recently been re-listening to Jack L's album Metropolis Blue recently. Fantastic. Really cool voice. And a little known fact about Jack L, he was a good Gaelic footballer.
Yeah, played for a thigh full forward, was pretty good at scoring goals. Played rugby too. Played rugby, a lot of rugby too for a thigh.
You mentioned things going full circle. I used to play the Jack L with Jack L and the Black Romantics on my car CD player. My two little girls became great fans. Now 23 and 21. We saw you in Whelan's together. Love your new album, Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole and The Sunset's Blue on Mars. Keep rocking. You're fabs.
Thanks,
Paula,
much.
Lydia and Gillian.
Brilliant.
Jack is a real singer, top class, Anthony. And on the Hulk died in the end. When he fell out of a plane, poor crater, says Mike.
That's right. It was I think it was Bill Bixby's last movie too. He died of cancer after.
Right.
Yeah. He wrote that one, I think.
What is it about 1970s TV intros? Amazing. The Hulk, $6 million man, fantastic. Never been top, says Dan. There was one guy who was responsible for a lot of them. Can't remember his name. I remember Jack singing in the school musicals and thought a great voice. And I love when Jack sings Summer Wind, says Paddy in County Galway. I saw Jack recently in Longford and he was brilliant as usual. Can you ask him why he doesn't do a meet and greet in Ireland like he did at the Birmingham gig last year?
Well, I do them all over the place.
Yeah, right.
So it depends what you've got on the next day, if you have to get somewhere to be early the next morning or that, because it can go on a couple of hours, you know.
Yeah.
So mostly I do. It's kind of a random kind of thing that happens.
Right. I heard Jack L singing in the church one Christmas in the Thai after Mass. He was great, says Danny. An extraordinary voice. Phil St. Flannan's Cathedral in Killaloe with his huge voice and mesmerising charisma. Had us in the palm of his hands. Stellar act. Brought us to another stratosphere. There, you'd like
Thank
that scene
you
as you're obsessed with. Glad he didn't become an astronaut, that person. And my husband used to sing our baby daughter to sleep every night with Rooftop Lullaby. She'll turn 18 this summer and the song holds a very special place in our hearts.
Yeah, that's a very popular one. It's one of those songs that kind of lives on late night radio, you know. It always pops up here and there. Rooftop.
No, maybe Evergreen isn't. Evergreen's the theme song from 1966 film A Star Is Born. So
that's it.
Like Evergreen in a sound, The Sound of Music. Anyway, so you were Captain Von Trapp.
Yeah, Edelweiss is a flower.
That's
maybe where you're getting the Evergreen thing. Maybe.
Maybe. Well, listen, thanks so much for guiding us through the soundtrack of your life. Are there gigs coming up that you want to?
Yeah, I'm doing. The big ones are Vicar Street on the 27th and 28th of April. And I'm recording a live album, so I want all the best audience to come to that one. Who can, you know, all
give
the people
again.
Who can sing in tune or mime well.
Imagine you stop them at the door. Sorry, give us
auditions to get into the gig. Yeah, no, well, that's the main one I'm plugging. So that'll be fun. You know, I've done various live things, but with the new album, you know, you record an album and then you go and play it live and it takes on a new life. So I've got lots of great new songs like Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole, The Sunset Blue on Mars, Sky News Blues, King of Soho. They're great live songs, you know. They're good old knees up kind of vibe. Right. So looking forward to getting them in a
And when the album's contest. Ready, you might come back in and we'll give
Absolutely,
it a
Yeah, maybe I'll play some
Jack,
tunes.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a million, thank you.
Say hello to Ty for us.
I will, of course.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.